sandwich. Run, I say! Run!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm glad to have all of you along with us on this Thursday afternoon here at 3 o'clock Eastern Time. I'm so glad all of you joined us. Hello to everybody over at the Head On Radio Network. I'm on the chat room there, and hope to see a lot of activity there. Hello to all of our friends over at the Democratic Underground, Democrats.com, SmirkingChips.com. Glad to have all of you along with us. And hello to you sons of bitches over at Air America Radio that fired Mike Malloy. A special hello to you. Yes, indeed. We'll be spending some time this first half hour talking about that. Probably on and off the entire program. I'm pissed. I know a lot of you are. I don't think I've ever seen so much feedback over anything in the media as I have over that, maybe since Dan Rather got the can and he got screwed as well. So I hope the people did this are happy. And, well, anyway. We are going to talk about it a lot today, and let me just set up the program for you before I get going on that. Got a couple of great guests today, going to be very interesting. At the bottom of this hour, we're going to have Dave McMichael. Dave is a former analyst for the CIA and intelligence agency. He joined us before the Bush War started. And was right on the money, him and Scott Ritter and Albert and Mohammed Al-Baradei. We had all three of them on. Turned out that every single one of them knew exactly what the situation was. And so Dave's going to be a good guest today. And we'll be talking to him about the situation in Iran and just what to expect from that. We're also going to have in the second hour something kind of new for us on this program. We have Byron DeLeer is going to be on. He's a candidate, a greenie, and you know how I feel about that. And I'll ask him about it. But he's a green candidate running against a Democrat out there who's acted like a Republican. So Byron DeLeer, he's going to be on the second hour. And that should be interesting. If you got any questions for any of these people, we want you to give us a call. If you got any questions about anything I have to say, they have to say, anybody has to say in this program today, give us a call, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. If you want to vent, call and vent. Let's do it. I learned an important lesson yesterday. I guess maybe some of you did as well. A sobering lesson, really. And it's kind of sobering because I've learned it before, and it seems my brain just won't let it soak in for some reason. And why won't it soak in is because it's so damned objectionable. I just don't want to believe it. And what I had to learn all over again is that this country is being controlled by a bunch of assholes who don't give a damn about anything or anybody except for their own selfish desires and their mostly misguided ideas about what's right and what's wrong, and especially in the radio business. Now, what I've just complained could be germane to many issues of the day, but at the moment, I'm talking about those people who fired Mike Malloy from Air America Radio Network. Now, I know they've had problems from the very beginning. Everybody knows that. But I was hoping they would settle in and get going and help this force on the left that we're trying to get going, even up the playing field. From what I've heard, he was told it was a financial decision. And from what I know about AAR's pay scale for the other guys other than Al Franken, they don't pay all that well. And the salary of Mike Malloy wasn't going to break them up. Their obvious malfeasance could well break them, but not the salary of one Mike Malloy. So let's toss that lame reason right out the window right now before we get started. That's bullshit, and you know it. And pardon my language today, but I've put up with this for 30 some years in my life, and this one probably bothers me more than any. This had to be due to something else. And if you've listened to Mike for any time at all, you know he sometimes says some things that are a bit controversial, maybe a bit over the top. So do I. He doesn't sit there and try to be controversial. Mike just happens to be controversial with a lot of his statements because that's Mike. That is Mike. What you see is what you get. In your face, the good old cold hard truth, whether you want to hear it or not, and I happen to believe that Mike's listeners do want to hear it, or they wouldn't turn into his program. They'd turn to one of those more milquetoast broadcasters for their info and entertainment, like some of them on that other network. So my theory is that Mike must have said or done something to piss off one of the sponsors of Air America, or maybe one of the execs. And if it was one of the execs, then that exec should just have swallowed hard and let it go, because anyone at that organization worth his or her salt has to realize that Mike has a big number of AAR listeners in his back pocket. Mike's people love Mike. There's no other way to put it. Every host on that network has people bitching about him. Some love him, some tolerate him, some hate him. You hear that about all of them, us too, but not Mike's people. Oh, no. If you don't like Mike, you discover that right away, and you turn the dial elsewhere. Mike isn't for the casual listener. Mike has a message. A straightforward message, and he delivered it in a style that's passionate and provocative. And if you get in his way while he's delivering his message, you're going to feel like you just got run over by a freight train. Mike is that train. I've listened to Mike Malloy for a long, long time, and he's always been on a mission to inform and educate the public about the oh-so-obvious filth and corruption in our government. And no matter what you think about Mike's style, his delivery, his passion, his sometimes lack of tact, you know damn well he is almost always right on what he's saying. Almost always. And in these days of almost complete control of the radio by right-wing Bush bootlickers, how many people out there are hammering away on our side with the plain old unvarnished truth day after day after day? Oh, yeah. You got your comedians who are trying to be radio personalities, some of which don't know jack about the political scene and don't know jack about radio as far as I'm concerned, but they pretend they do anyway, and that's okay. If you aren't a hard-nosed political junkie, you might just like that. And obviously some people do. It's not my cup of tea, but that's just me. And then you've got your good old boy, hunting, fishing, country boy, who's popular with those who are easily fooled into believing he's for real. And that's okay, too, I guess. If you want to believe that. But how many broadcasters are out there who cut through the bullcrap? Mike asked the hard questions, and he demanded the answers. And he never allowed right-wingers to promote their unadulterated crap on his show. Simply put, we need more Mike Malloys, not less. And these days, when we're getting our brains beat out by the right-wing media, I think it's more critical than ever that we got people like Mike on the air fighting the good fight for our side. This can't be allowed to be the end of this issue. There has to be more to it. And I'll bet the proverbial dollar to a donut that we have not heard the truth of this as of yet because the management doesn't have the guts to give it to us. I don't know the answer to this episode, but I do know that by eating our own, we're going to continue losing. We're just continue losing. I'm a little disappointed over this whole thing for more than one reason. First of all, I hate the idea that radio's being ruined. Those of you that haven't been in this business for a long time or maybe never been in it, radio has been ruined. And we're trying to take it back here on Head On Radio Network. We're trying to take it back and put it back into its proper perspective of what it used to be. What it used to be and what it should be. An actual service to the people. A service where you can go and get the truth, where you can go and get some balance, where you can go and believe what's being said. That's what we're trying to do here on the Head On Radio Network, and that's what I always trying to do on my show. But radio's being ruined. I've done, all the way back, I've done high school basketball, college basketball, talk radio, been a DJ, hell, when I first started out. My job was to sweep out the studio in the morning and empty the wastebaskets before I went on the air in the morning show. And I'll get to the phones in a minute. Everybody hang on. I see them flashing there. Just bear with me for a minute, will you? And I know you will. And I thank you for calling. 866-546-5254. But back in the old days when we had tube-type transmitters and you had to wait for the tubes to warm up in the morning before you could start the program. And I know Bob Kincaid's a guy like that, too. Bob's been around a while. I've been around a while. I think I've been around a little longer than Bob. I'm a little longer in the tooth than he is. But that's how radio was. And it was, you had a kinship with everybody in the business. And now these big boys like Clear Channel are ruining it. They really are. And I'm a little disappointed. And let me tell you why I'm disappointed. I mentioned to you yesterday that I am, and many of you know, I am one of those people who will cut off my nose to spite my face. I will do it, and I have done it many times, much to my chagrin. Sometimes it's really cost me. But I had my self-respect left afterwards. I want to tell you a little story. One time, years ago, I was on the air in a small station up in Ohio. And the big boss came in. He owned 5 radio stations. Oh, what a big guy he was. Never ran a board in his life. Didn't know squat about even running a reel-to-reel tape recorder or anything. He comes in one day from one of the, you know, his head office at one of the other stations, says he's going to have a staff meeting. Well, it so happens I was on the air. And there's about, 8 of us, I think, at work at that studio at that station at the time. And he calls us into his big old office, and he's telling, he didn't really have anything to say to everybody. He was there to talk to the sales staff. And what he wanted to say to the sales staff was that he was cutting their commission, and he was taking all the accounts they had and making them house accounts, and they were all going to have to go get new accounts and start all over again. Greedy bastard, that's what he had to say. So a big argument ensued. And don't forget, I was on the air, and that's back when we were playing carts in the cart machine and playing albums and so forth. And one of the salespeople spoke up and said they didn't like that. Didn't like it. And he said he was going to quit. And I said, wait a minute, we're all going to quit. Every single one of us, and the rest of them looked at me. Their eyes got pretty big around. And I told that boss, I said, every damn one of us is walking out of this studio right now if you don't change your mind. He says, well, I'm not changing my mind. So you know what? All of a sudden, everybody got some guts, and everybody walked out the door and went and got in their cars and drove away from that station. And I will never forget, ever, and neither will anybody else around that town that was listening to that station that day, I had an LP playing, and when I walked out of that station, I'll never forget driving down the road, having the station tuned in, hearing that click, click, click over the air of that LP that was playing, and it was done, and you know, always that click, click, click at the end, and you know, the guy that owned the place, he wasn't smart enough to even figure that out, he didn't catch on for about 15 minutes. You know what? everybody was back to work the next day. And so I'm a little disappointed. And I know it's a different day, it's a different time, and I know people need their jobs, but I'm a little disappointed at the reaction by the rest of people at AAR. And I know I don't know everything about it, but I'm one of those people who said, hey, gang, all for one and one for all. That's just me. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, guys. This is Dee. I'm not getting you on the internet at all, but I mainly wanted to call about it to see if you happened to watch Keith Olbermann last night.
Oh, certainly.
Wasn't that fantastic?
Yeah, I've got that recorded, and I'm going to play it a little later today.
Oh, fantastic. I'm so glad you saw it. I was standing up cheering. It was wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Okay, well, I'm going to try again.
Okay.
Anyhow,
thank you.
Keep it up, Guy. We need you.
Thanks very much for your call. Good to hear from you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, here we go again. Okay, we see you in the chat room. Everything's up and running fine. Good. That's good to hear. All right, let's go back to the phone. Again, I want you to give us a call, 866-546-5254. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I wanted you to talk about Mike Malloy.
Yes.
I was just sick when I heard you talking about it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I was away from the computer when, I don't know when you found out, but according to what his wife wrote, on the email is they found it out about the same time.
Yeah, evidently.
And, see, Air America has been so great for me. I don't listen to all of it, but I go to sleep on it. You know what I'm saying? So I don't hear all of it, even some of my favorite shows, even Mike Malloy sometime. But he's grown to be one of my very favorites. And last year they took off... Mark Moran, he is a comedian, but they had a really good show, and I think they've taken him off the one in California. And Sam Cedar last night, he talked about Mike Malloy, and he said he was, you know what about it.
Yeah, I heard him say it at the end of the program. I tuned in at the end of Sam's show just to hear what he would have said, and that's kind of what I was alluding to right there. I know people need their jobs, but for my money, that would have been a good time for everybody at that place to just say, hey.
Well, yeah, but I don't know all of those details. But now, I don't know, I didn't hear the other guy that came on, Tom Hartman. I know he's very popular, but, you know, I just couldn't get into it.
Well, it's a different time now, and I know, in the days when I'm talking, when we all walked out of the studio there, what I was talking about, why... You could go out and get another job the next day.
And
I never did really make my living actually broadcasting. Most of the money that I've made in my life on radio has been through doing commercials and voiceovers. That was my talent, but I've done a lot of on-air as well, but always more for fun than anything else. I hate it when a guy like Mike, a real pro, I mean a real pro.
Can I just read you the email I sent? It's just
yes,
it's
please
real
do.
Short.
Please do. And everybody else, hang on. We'll get to your call.
It says a lot. Ever since last year when you canceled Mark Moran, you've messed me up. This is to Air America. I love Air America. Why are you doing this to Mike Malloy? Why are you doing this to me and others? We waited so long for someone to be there for us on the liberal side. It has been healing, but when you mess with the lineup of folks we have come to love and respect for their empathetic knowledge and truthfulness, you tear us apart. When 2004 did not go our way, I think I would have been suicidal if not for Air America. Stop and think. Don't mess with our emotions. You have some wonderful people who care. I believe they care because they care to be informed. Get another business plan. Stop using ads that promise you to get rich quick. Surely you can get support somewhere else. We the people, maybe. A member from the beginning. Juanita.
Well, I'm sure they're getting a lot of correspondence. I'm sure they are,
but,
and I hope they continue to get it.
I know they probably don't care, but anyway,
they better care.
That's sort of the way I feel about it.
They better care.
I just almost see us... going to the Bastille, you know, with our ramrod.
There you go. Get our torches out and head for the Bastille.
Yeah, have the ramrod, you know, that big old ramrod.
Yeah. Hey, got to move on. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yes, this is Sarge from Mississippi.
Hi, Sarge.
Guy, I appreciate that story you gave. That was great. I wish we could see more of that today.
It's a true story.
I wish we could see it today, because if there was, I bet you there'd be radio people walking out all over America today.
Oh, yeah.
Listen, I want to tell you, I know Mike real well, and I am one of his biggest fans. I just adore Mike Malloy. He's done a lot for me. He's done a lot for people. And anyone wants to read some of the things that Mike Malloy has meant to people, just go to my website at powersandmorrison.com. Also, we are organizing a thing called Watch Your Back Group. And what we're going to do is we're going to do everything we can to write letters, to email, do everything possible to try and get Malloy back on air as soon as possible. If we have to, we'll take donations and we'll pay Malloy's salary to come to Horn. But we're going to do whatever it takes to get Malloy back on the air as soon as possible.
Well, that'd be a great thing. Mike is very deserving to have a good job. I was so thrilled for him when he finally, you know, AAR was around for what, maybe 6-8 months, I forget, until they finally got Mike on, and I was thrilled when he got on there. Of course, it's through his friendship with Sheldon Drovny and now Sheldon no longer has the big say around there. He's on the board, but he doesn't make the decisions, and I know he's disgusted with this. But.
Well, you know, Guy, one thing that I like about Horn is the way that you guys are setting this thing up to where no corporation can come in and say, we don't like this, we're censoring this, bye.
Yeah.
And I hope Horn will stay that way, because I think that if there's not some kind of guidelines within the network itself, this is going to be the way everything is going to be done from now on, and it's wrong. It's just damn wrong.
Well, it is, and it's too bad. You know, that translates right over into politics. It's too bad. Okay, you take some ads from somebody, and it's got to be clear. We'll take your ads, we'll play your ads, and we'll promote you, but you have no say in what we say, you know, what we do on the air. You either like it or you don't, and that's that. And it's too bad our politicians can't be that way and say, okay, I'll take your bank's money for my campaign, but, buddy, don't you plan on me voting for you. I'll vote for it if I think it's right, and I won't if I think it's wrong.
I just saw someone post at the chat room that they saw a thread at Democratic Underground that Alex Jones is going to have Malloy on tomorrow, on his show tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. He said he doesn't know if that's true, but he saw it on Democratic Underground, and Mike is real big on that site, so it's probably true.
Yeah, I would say so. Alex is a good guy, too.
I emailed Greg Palace as soon as I found out and asked him if he knew anything, and he said Mike had emailed him, but he had not talked to Mike yet.
Mm-hmm.
But he was going to. So Greg will probably get back with me on that, I hope, and I'm sure he will. But there is a petition that you can sign. I've got it linked on my website, on my page. So anybody wants to sign it, and please sign it. What it does is not, it says that they're asking for Malloy back on Air America. But the truth is, if you sign that, it sends a message to them, regardless of whether Mike goes back to them or not, and I don't think Mike will. But regardless, it sends them a message that they screwed up, and I beg everybody, please sign this, and let's get behind Mike, and let's show Mike that he has a fan base that's not going to go away. We're going to fight as hard as we can, as long as we have to, but we're getting the man back on the air as soon as we can.
Well, I certainly hope that can happen, Sergeant. I appreciate your efforts, and I know Don well, Mike will as well.
Guy, thank you, and I'm going to hang you up and listen to you.
Thanks. Bye now. Many, many efforts. Many people pouring out their emotions, their thoughts, and you know, I've stuck around something I don't normally do, Usually in the evening, I'm working on the next day's show. But last night, I'm afraid I was surfing around quite a bit, and I don't recall seeing so much chatter about anything in a very, very long time than I have seen over this right now. And, you know, if there's one thing, if Mike didn't know it before, and I think he does, but if he didn't, he certainly understands that his fans are damn passionate about Mike Malloy. And I'm sure that that helps salve the wounds. It doesn't pay the bills, but it certainly helps salve the wound. And I hope whatever has been wrong here can be made right again. Mike is a deserving broadcaster. He's a veteran broadcaster. He's one of the real pros. And there are a lot of good people on radio around this country. A lot. And really, there are. Many, many, many. But what Mike does is kind of unique. And his fans know that. I've listened to Mike. You know, I get worked up. I do, and I'm able to vent and get it out and all that. But there's times I listen to Mike and I'm sitting here going, "That's right, Mike. God damn it, you tell him." And I know a lot of people feel the same way. And Mike has always been a venue for a lot of folks to get their feelings out, bring out those feelings. And he's great with his phone calls. What can I say? I'm not going to say anything about Mike that the rest of you don't know, but all I know is a great broadcaster's been wronged, and I know we'll talk about it some more during the program, and we've got some interviews coming up and so forth. But if you have anything to say about it, you give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. And Sarge is right. It's not going to be that way here at Head On Radio Network. That's the nice thing about being independent of the, you know, there's good points and bad points to that. some of those outfits bring in a ton of money, and that's the good part. But the bad part is when they start coming to you, we'd rather you didn't say anything about the president, you know. I mean, or kind of back off a little bit, maybe, or... Maybe we'd rather you didn't say so much about the war going on over there between Israel and Lebanon, and you've said a few things, and maybe you ought not quite be so vociferous about some of the things you say. Well, that's not happening here, and I like that. You remember when Johnny Paycheck came out with that song, "Take This Job and Shove It"? You remember that old song? I was working at a station, and a station manager came in just to tell you how radio is. I'd been there a while, and I didn't like it. And they changed formats on me, and I didn't care for it in the first place. And I was getting ready to leave. I wasn't going to stay there very long. But the manager came in and read the riot act to me over something I had said. And I didn't swear or anything. I know how I can talk on terrestrial radio and how you can talk on this radio. And I try not to offend many people. You know, try to keep that to a minimum anyway. But I never ever did that on terrestrial radio. But he came in and he told me some things he didn't like as some things I was doing. And I put on that old Johnny Paycheck, "Take This Job and Shove It," and got up and walked right out of the studio. Oh, yeah, that's me. That's me. Hey, we're going to pause for a break right now. And I don't have that song, or I'd play it right now. If I did, I most certainly would play that. So hang around. Don't go anywhere. And we'll get our guest here and be back in a couple of minutes.
By the rivers of Babylon we sat and wept when we thought of home so far away. On the branches of the willow trees we hung our harps and hid our hearts from the enemy.
All right. Glad to have everybody back with us, as promised. And, my goodness, am I all fingers today or what? I can't get anything done right. Actually, got Dave on the phone and disconnected him. Had to give him a call back. As promised, I've got Dave McMichael with us. Dave is a former analyst for the CIA. He's a member of the steering committee of the Veterans Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. You may remember, most of you, that our good friend Ray McGovern is a member of that organization as well. And I got a hold of Dave today and wanted to talk about the situation in Iran, and he stays well-versed on it. Dave, thank you for being with us today.
Well, I'm happy to come aboard and talk to you, Guy.
Sorry about the phone confusion. I'm having one of those days. I don't know. I know that you fellas, well, you've kind of got a fraternity, don't you? You ex-CIA guys, and you probably stay in touch with some of your people you still that are still there. Have you been out of the CIA for a long, long time?
Oh yeah, I left the building in my goodness, it's 23 years ago in 1983, and it gives me a start when I come across people referred to in the news as veteran CIA professionals who came in after I left. Make me feel my age.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, but it's through VIPS, we right now, and the other group with which I worked with and for a very long time, the Association of National Security Alumni, we continually deal with people who have very recently left, and many of our members, you know, who are long-term professionals in the organization, quite naturally keep up with their old pals, and we get quite a bit of information flowing to us. I don't know whether you call those leaks or not, but we do get a lot of opinion from people who are very close to the situation today.
I guess I'd call it kind of to my mind at least, a sad commentary that a lot of the important issues that you were working on in those days, before you, quote, I love you, where you guys say that, left the building. Sounds like Elvis. Elvis always said that. Some of the same problems you were working on are still right smack dab in the news today. And, you know, Iran was a problem then, and it still is.
Yeah, well, Guy, there's two ways. One of them, of course, are situational problems, if you will, or I like to refer to things as situations. If you say problems, people expect you to come up with a solution, and I don't like that. But, yes, Iran certainly was very much part of things at that time, because the Iranian Revolution, which overthrew the Shah, resulted in the hostage crisis in Iran, where the members of the United States Embassy were seized by a revolutionary student group there and were held for 400 and some days, and probably cost Jimmy Carter the presidency, as a matter of fact, because of his inability to get them released. But the other aspect to it, in terms of problems with which we deal, or situations with which we deal, is the ongoing and always continuing politicization of intelligence, under which the intelligence community, the intelligence system, its analysts and others, are under constant pressure from policymakers to come up with information which will support the actions they've already decided to take. We saw that, of course, most dramatically back in 2002 and 2003 in the run-up to the war on Iraq.
Did it exist when George Herbert Walker Bush was the head of the organization? You were there then.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, when George Herbert Walker Bush, in the, you know, the aftermath of the scandals of intelligence in Vietnam, you know, took over the organization, which he headed just briefly for 11 months, but the principal activity carried out during his tenure was the establishment of the famous or infamous Team B, under pressure from those who thought that the Kissinger policy of detente with the Soviet Union was failing to really present the total threat which the mere existence of the Soviet Union posed, brought in the sort of scholars that we would today call neocons, or in some circles, neo-crazies, mm-hmm. formed Team B, which provided an alternative view of the threat posed by the then-Soviet Union. So, yes, it if you want to say that George Herbert Walker Bush, as the director of intelligence at that time, was involved in that, and you would look at it that way, and I do, yeah.
Well, we had one of our local guys here from where I'm from here, Porter Goss, running the outfit recently, and still don't know the truth of the matter, what happened there when he got, well, let's face it, got the axe.
Yes, what happened. And well, there were a lot of aspects to the departure of Porter Goss, and I don't think some of them are particularly relevant to what we're talking about today.
But, yeah, that's what I've heard. Well, let me ask you a question first, to kind of set a little bit of groundwork. You're an analyst. You're working inside the building at the CIA. You know there is political pressure to come up with answers that they want to hear instead of what you're actually mm-hmm. hearing. Is there a fear for your job? Is there a big resentment? What's that atmosphere like?
Well, I can tell you that I worked at a level, the National Intelligence Council, which is the coordinating body for the entire intelligence system, the intelligence community, if you will. And I was, you know, I was not a career professional in the sense I'd done lots of work with and for the agency and other elements of the U.S. government for years. So I was brought in under a initiative formed by my then boss, Hal Ford, a great guy, by the way, who, in response to fears that the national intelligence estimates were no longer being taken seriously and so forth, wanted to, because as community products, you know, they have to, the offices in the intelligence system which send officers over there to work on these things, and it sometimes takes, you know, quite a few months to get them put together. They don't want to send over their best people, you know. So they would do that, and then, of course, the people they sent over from the various parts of the intelligence system, and I would say particularly the military, were very eager to advance their points of view in this. So increasingly, these important estimates were being both politicized, bureaucratized, and effectively disregarded at the policymaking level. So Hal arranged to bring in a dozen or more people like myself who had some independent reputations to work on this. So I wasn't facing what these unfortunate young people face today. And I will say recruiting is going very well with the at the CIA and elsewhere, partly because of the lousy employment situation elsewhere. But these kids, or I shouldn't call them kids, but young people principally, who come into the Washington area and find themselves buying a house out here in Manassas or someplace 30 miles from Washington and carrying a mortgage burden that's beyond belief, you know, when they face that situation where their contributions, their analyses are being sent back with notes on them saying, well, the vice president's office doesn't really like this, can you, you know, and basically, I mean, this is the result of the investigation, by the way, into the 9/11 situation, and also the investigations, not completed yet, by the way, which have been carried out by Congress into the run-up to the Iraq War. They demonstrate this very fully, that people do feel that pressure, and especially for those who have not been in the system for, you know, very long, they're not, they don't feel confident enough to stand up, you know, to you know, some GS-15 or a representative from the administration who comes over there and, you know, and says, we don't like this. How do you prove that? You know, it's,
and so
unless you want to give up your weekends for the next 6 months, it'd be better to change a line or two.
Well, I don't envy some of these situations. You've got some young people in the building, and you've got a Cheney coming at you from one end, and maybe a, of course, not the actual one, but a Curtis LeMay type guy coming at you from the military. And
I can give you a name of a Curtis LeMay type guy who was in this present situation. The retired Air Force General Thomas McInerney, and he's the guy that's beating the drum the loudest right now for the necessity of major airstrikes on Iran.
An actual Curtis LeMay type guy?
Well, he's retired from the Strategic Air Command.
Oh boy!
And that frankly, as my friend and another very senior retired CIA officer named Ray Close. I don't know if you've spoken with Ray or not.
Yes.
He formerly was station chief in Saudi Arabia on two separate tours. I mean, and Ray shares my opinion, our opinion, about this the rather dubious nature of this crisis with Iran. But he's recently published a piece on the Internet in which he says, you know, yeah, at the present, the crisis will pass. There will be no heavy sanctions put on Iran, and the rains will be continuing basically as they are today, and before Bush leaves office, he will be so, you know, angered at what he will regard as this personal humiliation of his failure to push this policy through and get it endorsed by the world community, by the United Nations, that in fact the United States will engage in an all-out bombing campaign. Close, again, who is very near to the circles ongoing maintains, as do others I've talked to, that the most of the regular military at the highest level are entirely opposed to this because they've, you know, what has happened to them in Iraq, among other things. But the those who believe almost fanatically, as many I would say in the Air Force do over the decades, in the validity of and the conclusive power of strategic bombing, are eager to show what they can do, and they're pushing.
You know, Dave, of course it's fine for reasonable people to disagree on things, but there are positions on this that are so diametrically opposed from one another that it is, in fact, it's really hard to comprehend to hear from a layman looking at your radical neocon on the one side wanting to let the bombs fly, and you know, your politicians on the other side saying no, let's talk this out. It's really hard for us out here, we just common regular old voters, to see what goes on there. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is on specific issues, of course, very hard to see it. I'll take it back one step when you start talking about politicians in this. You know, in talks I've given around the country over this last year or so, and people come up with the question you just asked, well, what can we as voters do? You know, and I say, well, the one thing I can think of that's immediately applicable is say to anybody who is seeking your vote for a seat in the Congress, you know, in either house, would you commit to that when the President of the United States asks to, or not even asks, but decides to send United States troops abroad, that you will insist that the Constitution be followed and that there be a full, openly debated declaration of war before this happens?
Yes.
Now, we haven't done this since 1950. You know, actually done it since 1942, and going to war with in the Second World War. Korea, Vietnam, all of these other, you know, medium-sized wars we've engaged in this time. There's been absolutely no reference to the Constitution on this. To me, you're asking, you know, how voters should be. Okay, if there's a constitutional declaration of war, figure, okay, we go.
Well, I try and bring that up now and then. I think it's we, the voters, who have abrogated our responsibilities and not pounded away at this over the years. There have been so many people, you know, just like the declaration of war, if there is an official one against Iraq. Voters just pretty much said, well, you know, it's the president, and, you know, he knows.
Well, of course, they've been conditioned to that because, people who were are voting today, the vast majority of them were born, sometime after 1950. So, this is what they know, and this is what they figure. Well, this must be constitutional, and of course precedent, you know, has a large effect on these things, and
sure,
but that's what people are, as you say, accustomed to accept, and they don't.
Too much trust and in the wrong people. I know what Mr. Close has said, and I agree with him in many ways from what I can see in what my uninformed mind can conceive, that of course we may well hold off against any hostilities toward Iran until most certainly after the midterm elections, and maybe sometime like that. I kind of agree that George Bush will do his very best to do something before he leaves office. What similarities are you seeing? We're heading down that road. What similarities are you seeing now in the run up to the Bush Iraq war?
Well, I think there are more. Of course, there are obvious surface or superficial similarities. You know, the widely bruited and not very well supported charges against another country that it poses an imminent threat, particularly to the United States and world peace, particularly through the possession of nuclear weapons. Okay? This was certainly part and parcel of went forward in the run-up to the war on Iraq. Where the real difference lies, of course, is in the fact that after the decision was taken to go to war, and we did go to war, invade Iraq, on the basis of these charges, it was found, oh, these weapons of mass destruction don't exist. And just as the UN's chief inspector, Hans Blix, had been saying in his reports, they're not there. And they weren't there. Now, this has severely, perhaps not as much in the U.S., but as abroad, so severely undermined the credibility of the United States government and the intelligence on which it allegedly bases its actions, that you do face a different situation in regard to the Iranian crisis at the present time. The second aspect to this is that when the United States made the decision in the run-up to the war into Iraq, there was a conviction among, again, we'll refer to the neocons or neo-crazies, people who had assumed extremely important positions, and we can name a few, Mr. Paul Wolfowitz, who's currently the head of the World Bank and returned for his brilliant estimates going into here, and Mr. Frum, and
Mr. Others, Pearl
and Richard Pearl and others who hold very important positions. We even go back and we drag back in, my God help us, Elliot Abrams, the one of the Iran-Contra.
And of course, Shalabi and Curveball. Right.
He is now the principal National Security Council advisor on the Middle East. Now, that's an interesting post for him to hold, and he does have Bush's ear on this. But the point I'm making is that those people at that time had, again, looking back on the rapid success of the United States-led coalition forces in the first Gulf War, they were arguing very strongly that, of course, this would be an immediate and complete military success. I think we can recall a certain chief executive of the United States standing on the on an aircraft carrier some now 3 years ago.
Oh, yes.
Proclaiming mission accomplished.
Yes.
And that having been met with roses and other tributes, this would be all over at a cost to be paid, incidentally, by Iraqi oil revenues, period.
Right.
Now, you can't lose a whole lot more credibility than that, can you?
No, you really cannot.
So if you're asking for a comparison between the run-up to Iraq and the run-up to Iran, is that there are very few sane people, you know, in the world today. The occasional flat-earthers will be out there, you know, who will accept at face value the claims of Mr. Bush or of Vice President Cheney or Secretary Rumsfeld or our UN ambassador, now known as Bonkers Bolton, who are pushing these actions, and they're very strong statements. They are not taken at face value. And the estimates of cost, and here is another aspect to this, too. The full impact of the oil crisis, world oil crisis, and I can call that a crisis, I guess, had not existed back in 2002. And today, when, you know, very respected international economists asked to comment upon this confrontation with Iran, said, well, if this comes, you know, to the imposition of massive economic sanctions, or God help us, to military action, we can expect oil prices to immediately rush up to over $100 a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is something that your average voter who does go to the gas tank once or twice a week can appreciate. So these are all differences. Now, I'll tell you one other step that is very aspect of this, which is to me extraordinarily important, is that Iran is a signatory to the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty. And that treaty specifically allows a participating country to carry out the full range of activities that are incorporated under peaceful uses of nuclear power. And that means being able to develop the fuel to use in a nuclear power system, which is, we're talking enriched uranium here, okay?
Yes.
And the Iranians protest that they have been abiding by the NPT since they signed it when it came out in 1974. They agreed when this issue came to a head 3 years ago with the European Union basically carrying the ball for the United States in this and raising suspicions that Iran, a certified member, if you'll recall, the Axis of Evil, was producing, was really using its program as a cover for an attempt to produce nuclear weapons. So the Iranians agreed to the establishment of what's called an extraordinary protocol to their responsibilities under the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty to allow the International Atomic Energy Association, which is the body charged under the NPT with monitoring the behavior of the signatory countries, to carry out extraordinary and detailed investigations going far beyond the scope of those which the treaty obliged them to accept. The result of this is that the chairman of the secretary, general, I should say, of the International Atomic Energy Association, an Egyptian national named Mohammed Al-Baradei, who has a very high reputation in international circles, produced a report now a little over a year and a half ago, which said although his investigations had revealed the existence of activities that should have been reported over, you know, the last 20 years by Iran, they were of a very minor nature, and that Iran was in substantial compliance. That's, I'll put quotes around substantial compliance with its obligations under the treaty. And he was under enormous pressure, of course, just like the unfortunate CIA analyst we were talking about before, to come up with something different.
Yeah, but his integrity is unquestioned, is it not? I mean, he won a Nobel Peace Prize.
And that's why he won it.
Yeah.
That's why the Nobel Committee in Oslo.
And our government tried so hard to berate him before the Iraq War.
Oh, yeah. Well, just as had been done with Hans Blix before.
Yes.
You know, so I mean, this is nothing new, and where it stands. Now, the report which the IAEA issued today as a result of the United Nations Security Council resolution, what was it, 1659, back in May, you know, which, came up finally with the demand that Iran, cease the enrichment of uranium. Now, what Al-Baradei is going to report today, the report has not been issued, but I'm reasonably certain that this is what it will say. That Iran is still carrying out a variety of activities in uranium enrichment and therefore is, resisting this demand. It's important, however, my view, to understand that the United Nations Security Council, by whatever resolution it passes, is not empowered to remove the treaty rights from another United Nations member state.
Mm-hmm.
So, in effect, this is a demand, and it is a demand, and those who signed on to it, as Mr. Bolton said today in his fulmination, committed to it. But if you would take it into court...
It can't stand.
By by my reasoning, you can't stand. Now, I know courts do funny things.
Well, yeah. Dave, we're coming up to the top of the hour on news. I do want to thank you. I'll reserve the right to have you back on in a while later on and go over this some more as it transpires.
Yeah, but just before we get off, let me say very quickly that I am more optimistic about the conclusion of this than Ray Close and some others. I think the Europeans are coming to their senses. Look at the statement made by the Italian foreign minister just yesterday. Okay, nice talking.
Dave, thanks so much. Thanks so
bye-bye.
Very much. There's a gentleman right there that knows what there is to know about this situation. Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show. We're going to go to the news at the top of the hour. Don't go anywhere. We're going to come right back, and I got a great interview coming up for you. Oh, I don't know, about a quarter past the hour. You're going to love the rest of the show today, I guarantee it. You listen to the Guy James Show.
This is the Quality News Network. A hurricane watch is in effect for the Carolina coastline, where Ernesto could cause flash flooding and coastal storm surges of 3 to 5 feet above normal tide levels tonight or tomorrow morning. National Guard troops have been activated in both North and South Carolina, and Virginia's governor has declared a state of emergency. Hurricane John, now a Category 3 hurricane, is lashing Mexico's west coast with winds and rain and heading for the tip of Baja California, where 10,000 residents have been evacuated in the low-lying areas surrounding Cabo San Lucas. The UN watchdog agency, the International Atomic Energy Agency, has reported that Iran shows no signs of suspending its uranium program. That clears the way for the UN to consider sanctions against Tehran. And U.N. Ambassador John Bolton says that those can be imposed even if the U.N. Security Council does not reach a unanimous agreement. The European nations will be meeting next month in Tehran to try and work out a negotiated solution to the crisis. In Iraq, another U.S. soldier was killed, 8 wounded by a bomb blast north of Baghdad yesterday. Today in Baghdad, several bombs have killed as many as 46 and injured dozens. More than 60 governments and charities meeting in Stockholm have pledged $900 million for reconstruction efforts in Lebanon, while also urging Israel to lift its blockade of the country. The total dollars now pledged for Lebanon's rebuilding, $1.2 billion. The Israeli army has transferred control over a portion of the Israel-Lebanon border to Lebanese and international troops for the first time in 2 decades. In addition, Israeli soldiers have begun pulling out from the outskirts of Gaza City following a 5-day operation to find tunnels and explosives. A new poll shows that a majority of Americans believe that the cost of the war on terrorism is too high and are pessimistic about the chances that Osama bin Laden will be caught. NASA has rescheduled the launch of the space shuttle Atlantis for next Wednesday from Florida's Cape Canaveral. At the same time that Reuters is reporting, emissions of greenhouse gases from industrialized nations rose to their highest level in a decade back in 2004. California is about to impose the most sweeping controls on greenhouse gas emissions in the United States. Bowing to pressure, Ohio's Secretary of State is delaying for a couple of months the destruction of paper ballots from the 2004 presidential election, ballots that had been scheduled to be destroyed next week. Critics say they should be saved indefinitely, pending an investigation into irregularities which allegedly helped George Bush defeat John Kerry in Ohio. And Norwegian police say they recovered 2 stolen masterpieces by Edvard Munch, including the screen stolen 2 years ago.
Divorce is never a pleasant experience, but it doesn't have to be a tragedy. If you can rein in the emotions, step back from the anger and victimhood, you can end your marriage with dignity instead of hostility. You married with the best of intentions. Now you need to untie the marital knot with the same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than the months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
Mortgage rates have fallen for the 6th straight week. Freddie Mac reporting the average rate on the 30-year fixed rate loan has dropped to 6.44%. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke saying today that America's productivity probably will keep growing solidly for some time to come. American consumer spending was up last month. The Commerce Department reporting that spending was up 0.8%. That's double the gain in June and the highest increase in 6 months. BP officials say they're optimistic that Prudhoe Bay oil production may be returned to normal levels earlier than expected. The flow of oil was cut back earlier this month when the company discovered corrosion in a portion of the pipeline. A new study shows that the amount of nicotine in most cigarettes has increased by 10% since 1998, and among the brands most preferred by teens, it has increased by 20%. Radio Shack used emails to notify about 400 workers in Fort Worth, Texas, that they are being fired as part of planned job cuts. In Chile, 2,000 striking workers at the world's largest copper mine are voting today on a new contract proposal. Union leaders say they're optimistic it will be approved, ending a 25-day walkout. Light sweet crude oil is trading this hour down 53 cents a barrel at $69.50. On Wall Street, trading is mixed. The Dow Jones Industrial is flat this hour at 11,384 points. NASDAQ is down just 2 at 2,184. And the S&P 500 is down 1 at 1,303. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
You bet. We're back. Glad to have all of you back. Got lots of listeners today and glad to hear from you. You may call the show 866-546-5254. 866-542. I got that wrong. How can I say my own phone number wrong? 866-546-5254. Got too many things going on here today. Trying to be director, producer, writer, you know, the whole ball of wax. 866-546-5254. I was trying to get a hold of Mike and Kathy during that break right there, and I'm not so sure I've been successful at it, but I'm trying anyway. Yes, indeed. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon, and maybe I get this echo off of here a little bit. Yeah, there we go. Lots to talk about. We've got an interview coming up in a few minutes. We're going to have a gentleman call in. It's going to be Byron DeLeer. He's running for Congress out in the 28th District in California, and he's a greenie. First greenie I've ever had on this program, and you know how I feel about that. You know how lots of you, and I know some of you don't like it that I say it, but I still hold Ralph Nader responsible for this predicament we're in right now for the last 6 years. I feel Al Gore would have probably been president now in his sixth year if it hadn't been for Ralphie Nader. But nonetheless, we're going to have Byron DeLeer on. He's a great guy. You'll find him to be an interesting interview. We'll have him on for a few minutes. He's going to tell us about what he wants to do. He's running against a Democrat. And that Democrat, I must admit, Howard Berman, has been a damn good friend to George Bush whenever George Bush needed him. So this could be an interesting conversation. So I urge you to stay tuned for that. 866-546-5254. So much happened in the news yesterday that I didn't get a chance to talk about a lot of it. As you know, we had that, let me just say it like it is, that asshole Don Rumsfeld. I'm beginning to sound like the kids on South Park now, aren't I? Yes, I do watch South Park once in a while, all right? I'm probably the only guy in the world my age who now and then actually sits down and watches a South Park episode. I like Cartman. Boy, have I embarrassed myself there. There's probably a lot of you going, what? I can't believe Guy James watches South Park. But I don't know. I find some weird humor in that now and then. I really do. I got to tell you a story. A couple of weeks ago, I was doing this fundraiser for Robert Neal here running for Congress against Connie Mack. And And, you know, if you're the MC, why, you got to come up with a few jokes. And so I was telling somebody about years back when I was single, I went to the grocery store to get something to eat for lunch. I wasn't near a restaurant or anything. I thought, well, I'll go in there and pick up a couple things. And, you know, I got one of those little applesauce, little single applesauce things, and I bought an apple and a half a sub sandwich. And I went up to the checkout counter, and, you know, I was fit. I was working out and everything. I'm younger than I am right now, and I was looking pretty good, you know? Looking real good, as a matter of fact. Buff, you might say. And I was standing there in line, and I noticed this gal walk up behind me, and she had just a few items, too, and she was looking me over. And I thought, hey, you know, and she was gorgeous. She really was. She was just gorgeous. And she looks at me, and she says, you know, I didn't say anything to her. And I tried not to be too obvious about it. And she looked at me, and she said, I'll bet you're single. And I thought, yeah. Yeah. I said, well, yes, as a matter of fact, I am. You could probably tell because I was just buying lunch for one here, huh? And she said, no, you're just plain butt ugly. That's how I figured that out. And so I got to, I don't know, the message was there, don't ever get overconfident. Anyway, I told all the people to dinner that. Didn't exactly happen that way, but almost. After this interview we're going to have coming up in a few minutes, we're going to talk a little bit about Donnie Rumsfeld and his nice little Nazi appeaser speech. You know, there are times I'm amazed. I mean, I'll just tell you the truth, and I know people don't like to hear you say stuff like this. I'm just amazed someone doesn't take a swing at a guy like Donald Rumsfeld. Does he have so many armed guards around him that people wouldn't dare? I mean, I know that's uncivilized and all that, but my God. Donald Rumsfeld, I mean, he's an SOB to lead all SOBs. I don't think that Cheney, yeah. Yeah, Cheney. I forgot. Cheney. Cheney's a bigger SOB than Rumsfeld. But, you know, they're the best friends, and they've been in government together, oh, clear back since, Nixon and Ford administrations. Yes. The two of them. Two bastards. I, it's easy to see why they've been in the kind of positions they're in all these years. A couple of cutthroat, no good, climb over everybody they have to get where they're at bastards. That's what they are. Cheney and Rumsfeld. I can't think in all my years of thinking over politics. You know, I think about Dick Nixon. I think of who else I think about. Reagan. Yeah, you know, he was just kind of a fumbling. Bush won. I'm trying to think. Tom DeLay. Now he's pretty bad. But Rumsfeld and Cheney. Whoa. I mean, these two guys are way, way beyond the pale. And you can see now, they've got their little act together. They've had their little meeting. Carl Rove has called them all together. They've had the meeting in the boardroom. And they've said, okay, guys, here's the game plan. We're going to go out and we're going to start the Nazi crap again. We're going to start the appeasing stuff again, that all the Democrats are weak on defense. They're un-American. They're this, they're that. If you're against the war in Iraq, you got to be against the war on terror. Therefore, you're immoral. And he starts talking about immoral and intellectual confusion. Immoral and intellectual confusion, my ass. I watched this speech in front of American Legion? Man. And, you know, Cheney's linking the whole thing together because we're losing the Bush-Iraq war. Let's face it. Let's be honest here. We are losing that war. It was lost the day we walked in there, the day they pulled that damn statue of Saddam down, it was over with. The insurgency was going to win that. There's no way for the United States to walk out of there without calling it a victory, without sending another 500,000 guys in there and spending 10 times more. I mean, there's no way. No way. And yet you've got these crazies wanting to go after Iran now. We've got half our military machinery in the shop. We're bankrupt up to our asses in debt that we'll never get out from. And we've got these radical nutcases like Cheney wanting to go into Iran. And it's just more, I mean, I don't know why the voters can't see it. It's just more fear-mongering in time for the midterms. That's all it is. It's an all-out fear campaign against the Democrats. It's worked for them before, and they think it's going to work again. And you know what? The voters are probably just dumb enough that it might just work again. Have you considered that? You know, you got Bush yesterday, what was his name, Brian Williams, interviewing him, saying, well, Bush says he's not going to politicize, and he's not going to be making any political speeches. Yeah, right. He's out spreading the same damn message today. And then you had a little Kenny Boy Melman on TV last night. Little Kenny Boy Melman. He's talking about the same scene, the Hitler deal. And now Melman, did you see that last night? Did you see him? He's, it's not stay the course anymore. It's adapt to win now. See, it's adapt to win. So, hey, we're going to take a quick break, get a hold of our next interview. We'll be back in just a couple. Don't go away.
I became a thin blue flame. Polished on a mountain range, and over hills and fields I flew. Wrapped up in a royal blue, I flew over Royal City last night. We're fighting the horns of a new moonlight. Caesar's ghost, I saw the wartime tide. Prince of Denmark's father still unquiet. The whole world was looking to get drowned. Trees were a fifth, shaking themselves at the clouds. I looked over curtains, oh, it's then that I knew that only a full house gonna make it through. And I became a thin blue wire. Held the world above the fire. And so it was I saw behind. Heaven's just a thin blue line. If gods are fairies in a cold dark room, the heavenly hosts are just the cold dark moons. You bent down and made the world in 7 days. Ever since he's been walking away, mixing with nitrogen and lonely holes, where neither seraphim or raindrops go. I see an old man wander in the halls alone, but only a full house gonna make a home. And I became a thin blue.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have gotta go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
All right, everybody, we're back here with the Guy James Show this afternoon. Glad to have everybody along with us. I see we've got a real nice audience this afternoon. I'm grateful for that. I'm glad every last one is with us this afternoon. And as promised, I told you we were going to have an interesting interview along about now, and here he is. We've got Byron DeLeer running for Congress for the Green Party, in the 28th District of California. And we're glad to have you. Byron, are you with us?
Yes, I am, Guy. How are you?
You're out on a media tour today, I understand.
Well, we've been making the stops here, appearing on several different television shows, the International News Network, and some cable TV shows here in Los Angeles.
And now the world's largest radio, well, almost, well, maybe not quite the largest, but anyway, we're awfully glad to have you along with us this afternoon. And our good friend Eileen Proctor out in California set this up for us today, wanted us to have you on the program, and sent me all the information on you, and I thought, yeah, this is a candidate I want to talk to. And we have a lot of listeners in California. So we hope to get the word out, but you're not in a primary now, are you?
Well, we were uncontested in the primary. We won the primary, and now it's this race is showing itself to be a two-man race between a corporate-handled establishment incumbent and former Howard Berman and myself, a progressive Green Party candidate. I've been endorsed by a great number of progressive Democrats in the district and even more centrist Democrats in the district because of one, actually a couple issues, but the primary one is that they see Howard Berman as being the Joe Lieberman of the House of Representatives and the Joe Lieberman of the Los Angeles Southland here because he has marched in lockstep with the Bush agenda in Iraq, the worst foreign policy conducted by our country in decades. And I'll make the argument that if you're a Democrat and you're breathing life into this agenda over there and you're bringing a pro-war personal agenda to Washington, D.C., that that's good cause to have you exited from the domestic political stage. Certainly we've seen how Joe Lieberman has shown himself to work directly against the Democratic Party now based on the Iraqi war issue. So this Iraqi war, this quagmire to quagmire resuscitation from Vietnam has shown itself to be a transpartisan issue here.
Well, yeah, Joe has certainly shown himself to be the headmaster of the Joe Lieberman Party now, I guess you'd have to call it. I wanted to ask you something right off, and as I mentioned to you before, I'm a lifelong Democrat, and everything I see on here from your ideas and your solutions to your problems and your thoughts about politics and everything, you appear to be much more of a Democrat than the Democrat you're running against.
That's a sad state of affairs.
Well, how is it then? How is it that it ends up this way and you didn't have a primary against him? Explain how this all turned out.
Well, you know, I arrived at the Green Party guy through the process of elimination, and one of the main concerns to me today is the compromising influence of big money in our political systems. And I know that there's a great many Democrats around the nation that make it an ethical position to not necessarily take money from Halliburton's or Exxon's or General Electric's or war profiteers. But the Green Party actually makes it a mandate that we will not take money from corporations, whether it is multinational conglomerates or even unions or 527 PACs. We're interested in representing people. The Republican leadership are serving Republicans. The Democratic leadership are serving Democrats. And where does that leave the American people? The American people have been left out. And there's less loyalty now for the leadership of those two PACs. Now, I don't have that, but I do have something that is unconscionable. Last year, Howard Berman actually co-sponsored legislation to rescind the 22nd Amendment to the Constitution. And the 22nd Amendment of the Constitution says that you can only be a president for two terms. So on one hand, we have George Bush trying to set up this imperial presidency with illegal unconstitutional actions and illegal wiretapping of Americans and torture memos, etc. And then on the other hand, you have a corporate-handled establishment Democrat like Howard Berman actually trying to pull away term limits from the White House. I consider this to be un-American. I consider this to be an affront to George Washington, who refused the kingship. And I actually had a dream last night where I saw a crown morph on George Bush's head. So I'm asking folks to say no to politics as usual, to say no to the status quo, and to vote for change, to vote our conscience in regard to Iraq, and send the first green to Washington, D.C. This is what we're invested in. And if I could, Guy, I'd like to just give my website to the folks there out in the audience. It's DelearForCongress.org, and that's DelearFor Congress.org. And like I mentioned earlier, we don't take money from corporations. So anybody that could shoot us a donation, we would greatly appreciate it. We're buying media commercials right now. We've got some great messages to talk about how Howard Berman is detached from upwards of 80% of this district who opposed the war. And we really think we could make political history here.
Well, how about polls? You got any polls going? I mean, how's it looking for you?
Well, we're preparing to do a poll, but we've been doing a little bit under the radar polls and some stealth operations. And there's a huge buzz here going on in the district. We have brought online Marcy Winograd's campaign team to help us in this effort.
Oh yeah,
Marcy Winograd was. The Lamont campaign actually pulled a lot of the techniques and methods that Marcy Winograd had brought online. And as you know, you'd mentioned Eileen Proctor's name. She had worked on Marcy's campaign. So it's just great to see the American people put their partisan hat on the shelf to start to talk about what's truly in the interests of our nation today.
Well, that would be a start. I'm getting tired of it. I am. I mean, I'm a lifelong Democrat, but I would like to I'd like to do a little cleaning house. I really would. I have to admit it. I'm getting pretty tired of people not looking at what's good for everybody, rather than just trying to retain their offices, and that bothers me a lot. How do you? I got to ask every candidate the question. What do you feel? How do you feel about term limits?
I think the term limits are a necessary function of keeping the power rotating. And I think that it's a component that invests in the kind of checks and balances that our framers and founders intended. There was a saying a couple hundred years ago, 225 years ago, we hold no allegiance to any crown. This was a saying in America. This was a call to action. Well, we don't necessarily have royalty in the traditional old sense of the word today, but we certainly have a new monarchy in our midst, a new monetary monarchy in our midst, if you will. And the American people need to say no more to the polluting and compromising influences of the gamesmanship that occurs in Washington, D.C. by big money coming in. I mean, upwards of 98% of the politicians that get elected wield the largest campaign war chest.
Sure.
And it begs the question, why are we even counting votes anymore? If it's the guy with the most money wins, then just don't even take a vote. Well, that's un-American. And it needs to stop. It has crossed the line. We must demand something different for our nation. And it's up to the people to talk to one another through the internet and through all these new means and methods that we have to communicate amongst ourselves outside of the top-down media, corporate-controlled venues that exist today. We have a window of opportunity to champion a different story, to champion a different narrative, and that's what our individualistic attitude in this nation is based on. And we need to awake the sleeping giant and say no to political gamesmanship, to say no to K Street. America shouldn't have a K Street.
I've been wanting a bulldozer down that street for a long time. I think
That's interesting you say that, Guy. I was actually thinking about bulldozing that pavement on K Street as well, and maybe planting some corn and some sunflowers or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that'd be the best thing that could happen for America. I'm so tired of it. I had a guest on yesterday from the Physicians for National Healthcare, and asked him how many lobbyists they had, and they don't have any. And you know, the big pharmacy and the big hospitals and the big medical or the insurance companies, they've hundreds, thousands actually. And it's just a shame what K Street. Hey, I've got a bunch of people looking at the chat room here that we keep posted during the show. They're asking for your website again.
Okay, it's www.DelearForCongress.org, and that's D-E-L-E-A-R, forcongress.org. And, of course, there's a donations button on there. If any folks want to shoot us a campaign donation, we greatly appreciate it. We're here to serve what the founders intended for this nation. We're here to reinvigorate our republic, to reconstitute our nation. I also have an address here that I'd like to offer folks if they want to mail something in. It's 3940 Laurel Canyon Boulevard, number 460, Studio City, California, 91604. And again, that's 3940 Laurel Canyon Boulevard, number 460, Studio City, California, 91604. And one of the aspects that we're bringing online here in this campaign is the fact that when you have a Democratic incumbent, now, there was a recent Pew poll that came out that said that 53% of America opposes the incumbents right now. They oppose politics as usual. And what this means is that for the first time in our nation in a long time, there's less loyalty to the two corporate-handled parties than ever before. So the way to break this sort of stranglehold is to actually get behind one campaign and send the first green to Washington, D.C., the first independent, you know, to come in D.C. for a while. And what this will do is it will create an environment through where broad stroke solutions can come online, visionary solutions can come online. I'll start talking about the Iraqi war in terms of the $4 to $6 trillion worth of quality crude that resides under the Iraqi soil. I mean, these are the perspectives that are being avoided by the mainstream media, being avoided by politics as usual, and it's so necessary for the American people to be aware of these truths. I mean, James Madison said that knowledge will forever govern ignorance. And if a people intend to be their own self-governors, they must wield the power that knowledge brings. We need to bring this truth online, and the Green Party offers a truthful perspective about what's going on the planet and in terms of international events today.
You know, Byron, this is really something. I have candidates on my program from now on, and we have a chat room running, and I just let you know, one of them said right here, right now, says California's got all the breaks. If he was in my state, he'd have my vote right now. So that's good to hear. I like the enthusiasm, and I'm impressed with you. And I've done a lot of reading about you, and I would love to see you beat your opponent and be the first green in Congress. I wish you the very best of luck in that, and we'll keep track of you. We had Marcy on the program way back when, and she ran a good race. She ran a hard race, and one thing I've got to ask you, or I'm going to have some of my listeners kill me, or they'll write nasty notes to me. What do you think about the black box voting machine, the D-bolts and so forth?
It's fascism.
Oh.
I mean, why shouldn't we as Americans have our vote counted as religiously as the IRS counts our tax dollars?
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
This is worthy of a governmental, a gargantuan governmental enema in regard to how our vote is being treated. I have called for securing the vote through independent verification of ballot results, and I have called for actually to standardize the American voting experience. The voting standards are as wide and varied as the states are themselves, even beyond that. I believe that there are somewhere upwards of 13,000 different voting standards across the United States. I mean, when you buy a 2x4 in St. Louis, Missouri, or you buy a 2x4 in Los Angeles, California, it's the same 2x4. When you get a dollar in New York, it's worth about the same as a dollar in Sacramento. Now, we have seen ATM barcode or ATM machines and barcode come online and become an everyday fixture in our lives, seemingly overnight. I think that the most sacrosanct institution of our republic, which is the vote, must be secured and protected. Indeed, I think it's worthy of a constitutional amendment. I think the 28th Amendment of the Constitution should say that ballot results will be independently verified, number one, and number two, we will have a standardization of the American voting experience.
Well, I can almost guarantee you all of my listeners in your district are gonna vote for you. Byron, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. And I've got to tell you, you're the most well-spoken, sincere candidate I think I've ever had on this program.
Oh, that's wonderful, guy. That's so wonderful. And I want to thank your listeners also for giving me the encouragement there in the chat room, because I got to tell you, the kind of slings and arrows that come your way when you stand up to be counted and show up to be of service is not the easiest stormy tempest to face. But when I get those kind of words of encouragement, it just puts some winds in my sails and wants me to take this populist perspective to D.C. and start our country on towards safe harbor.
Well, good luck, my friend. The very best of luck to you in your race, and we will keep track of you, and hopefully maybe we'll get to talk to you again before the election.
I'd love that, guy. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Oh, what a what a great interviewee. Wow. You won't believe what just happened here. I forgot to turn off my cell phone, and my cell phone rang. And it was a political advertisement on my cell phone. I didn't know they could even do that. I really didn't. But, I got sidetracked there. Byron DeLeer, heck of a good guy. I had a chance to talk to him earlier today. I'm so glad we had him on today. He speaks my language politically without question. Again, that's DeLeerForCongress.org. Interesting guy. Very interesting guy. His father was an opera singer, and his mother was a concert pianist. And he used to work for 20th Century Fox and founded Global Peace Solutions, an organization committed to brokering peace solutions throughout the Middle East. And he had a television talk show. And, I mean, he's just a very interesting guy, very well-rounded and friendly. He's a great interviewee. That's just all there is to it, period. We'll keep track of it, and I hope we can all send him a contribution and some moral support as well. Let me see. I guess we better take a quick break right now, okay? And when we come back, we've got a few odds and ends to finish up here today. So we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
By the rivers of Babylon we sat and wept when we thought of home so far away. On the branches of the willow trees we hung our harps and hid our hearts from the enemy. And the men that surrounded us made demands that we clap our hands and sing. From the enemy.
Hey, back with you for the last few minutes of the Guy James Show. Been a wild one today. Been a good one. Been one of those shows I have enjoyed. A little bit of energy, a little bit upbeat. Start off the show all pissed off. Still pissed off. Intend to remain that way until I find out what the truth is coming out of AAR. Not like I give a damn about AAR now, mind you. That's not where my loyalties lie. But my loyalties do lie with Mike Malloy. And he knows that, and he knows that many of you have your loyalties behind him as well. And I try and keep up as best I can with the chat and email and everything right here. I just got a pretty neat email just a minute ago, and it's from somebody on the chat room. It says, "Hi, Guy, just had to dump a little. I'm so angry about Rummy's and Bush's speeches, I could spit nails. How dare they refer to real American patriots as if we want to support the overthrow of our country. How dare they? I realize they're desperate to turn elections in their favor, but it still infuriates me. It is enough for me that they have ruined our military, our economy, millions of lives, and conducted this illegal invasion and subsequent occupation. I don't have to list all the implications to you. You're already aware, but I'm so pissed. I just had to let you know. Thanks for doing your part to help make the world better. Thanks for listening. Jennifer." Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you for sending that. I got another. She's echoed the sentiments of so many of our listeners. I know how you feel. I know how you feel. We have a kinship, don't we? Yes, we do. And somebody sent me another email here during a break. I was looking at this. It says, "Hi, Guy. I watch South Park all the time. I have a collection of their DVDs. My husband watches it every night in the time slot that used to be the evening news. South Park is better. No sense getting upset at bedtime." Well, you know, we love South Park. Cartman is the best. "I'm Cindy, 54. My husband Steve's 59, so don't laugh. My hero." And she shows a nice picture of Mike Malloy on here. Well, thank you very much for sending that. Very very nice of you and very interesting. Love getting your email. I always love corresponding with people. And please forgive me if I don't always get back to you. I do try my best to get back to everybody that I can. We really do. And you know what? We're trying to build a good network here for you. And you know, we got Dr. Bill on. We got Mark on right before this show. And Bruce Birch. You know, I had never met Bruce. He comes up right after this show. And you know, just because this show's over, don't go away. I know a lot of you are here for the first time. And I want you to stick around, and I want you to hear what's on this network today. Bruce Birch, great guy. He come up at 5 o'clock, and then you got Bob Kincaid. He comes up at 7. Bob really is the founder and originator of the Head On Radio Network. Bob and I have kind of got similar stories. I heard him talking on his show last night. Bob, don't anybody tell Bob I was talking about him. Okay, it's just between you and me. Okay. I heard him talking last night on his show about how they came to him up there in Beckley, West Virginia, and said, "Well, you know, we can't, it's a financial thing, and blah, 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 we can't afford your show anymore." Blah, blah. Well, you know, lots of us in the radio business have heard that old bullshit. I've heard it, never quite in those terms. I've usually got it for having a big mouth. There's a reason they come and told me, say, "We didn't like what you said. You said something about the management. We didn't like that. We didn't like, you know, what you said about the president. Blah, 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 blah." And fortunately, like I said, most of the time, I never had to depend on any studio jobs to make my living, because I did most of it on voiceovers and commercials. That's how I really made my living with radio. And the studio time was just a fun time. And Bob pretty much laid that out last night. It's a passion. It's something you love when you start doing it and you start connecting with people, and it's a hoot. It really is. Especially for, you know, a good old farm boy like myself. I think the first time I ever started out on radio was on a Sunday afternoon. Now get this. If you want a dead shift, you start out on terrestrial radio on a Sunday afternoon. I remember it was near Thanksgiving time. And the station was giving away free turkeys. And I'll tell you how bad it was and how small a station it was. I had to call my friends while the music was playing to have them to please call in so I could give away free turkeys. That's a true story. It really is. But, you know, that's how it is. And that's how it was in the old days in radio. And I'm not that old. Well, maybe. No, I'm really not that old. But... Bob was talking about that last night, and it's a damn shame is what's happening to radio. It really is. But those of us that do it, we love it. Anyway, I was starting to talk about Bruce. I hadn't met Bruce until we went together to that Take Back America conference in Washington, D.C. And, you know, here we were on the same network, had never met, and, you know, what a pleasure it was. And we were there at that, that fancy Hilton Hotel doing our program there. We had the best location in the whole joint. You could see coming down the escalator. There we were right out in front of everybody. And we had a good time doing it. I'm not so sure I agree with everything that goes on at those sorts of things. Some of it's a lot of fluff and all that, But nonetheless, it was a great experience. But the best part of it was meeting Bruce. And so I want you to stay tuned after this program today and listen to the Bruce Bird Show. I know you'll enjoy it. He's a great conversationalist. He's got great ideas. He's got a good head on his shoulders. And you'll enjoy it. I know you will. So you do that. And after that's over with, you listen to Bob Kincaid. Bob Kincaid... He's going to hate me for saying this, but Bob Kincaid, he's kind of like the wise old country owl. You know what I mean? He's not that old, but he's wise beyond his years. And I love some of the good, you know, being up there from Beckley, West Virginia. I know where Beckley, West Virginia is. And he's got some of that good country down-home West Virginia intelligence, and you can tell it's there. He's got a lot between the ears, and he's got a lot of great ideas, and him and Bruce, you're going to love their shows, and Mark and Dr. Bill as well. So we hope you'll be around here on the Head On Radio Network. We do. And we'll do our best to satisfy you, to give you what you want. You may not always hear what you want to hear, but one thing you will always hear the truth. You won't hear some corporate guy standing in the back telling us, hey, you guys better say this or we're going to can your ass or we're going to stop sponsoring you. No, you're not going to hear that here. We're going to be, you know, my grandpa had a saying that he had an old friend. And I've loved this saying all my life. Maybe everybody in the world had heard it but me. But when I was a little kid, my grandpa told me this saying of his old friend. He said, be what you is. Even if you is old and ugly, be what you is. And I've tried to live that way. And I love people that live that way. I do. I love to just be what you is. And that's what we is here at the Head On Radio Network. I hope I didn't countrify that too much. And once again, here we had another day go by, almost all gone. And I once again didn't get to... get into some things I wanted to today. I wanted to talk about that SOB Rumsfeld a little bit more. And Ken Melman last night, I thought I was going to croak when I heard him say, no, it's not stay the course now. It's adapt to win. Adapt to win. He says the Democrats always surrender in time of war. You know, I could just smack that Ken Melman. What a puke he is. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed just what a complete, you know, I'm coming up with all these sayings we used to say back in college, but I just can't think of anything else. You know, we call guys like him dweebs. He's just a dweeb. I don't know where that saying came from, but God, I can't stand that. When he comes on, I just want to, ooh. And then that Brian Williams interview with Bush, I thought he took Bush and cut him to pieces, and Bush didn't even know it. And Bush had the nerve to say, I never said the Iraq ordered, that Iraqis ordered the attack But, man, you know him and his boys, they've been busy spreading that from day one. And then Melman comes back, and I caught another little thing he said. I was sitting there taking notes. The first time I've heard this. Iraqi-style democracy. They've been saying, oh, we're spreading democracy throughout the whole Middle East. Oh, yeah, democracy for everybody. This is the first time I ever heard one of them say Iraqi-style democracy. Yeah, Iraqi-style democracy. That's where everybody in the street carries an AK-47 or whatever it is and shoots their neighbors. That's their style. That's their style of democracy. Just shoot the hell out of everybody, blow up everything, and just fight amongst ourselves. And yeah, that's some democracy, all right. It's working out real well, isn't it? How many American soldiers died over there since last week? The weekend? What is it, 13, 14 since Sunday? And oh, it's going well, you know. It's going swimmingly to hear that bitch of Ann Coulter say it. Swimmingly. Yes. Oh, yes. I'm going to tell you. And then he stands down there. Bush stands down there in New Orleans yesterday. God. And they're talking about all the progress. Did you notice they had the signs on the little porches of each house? They, you know, when Brian was interviewing her, talked about all the progress they've made in New Orleans. And they went down this nice little street with all these nice new little houses. Why didn't they take them down the streets where there's nothing but utter death and destruction still laying there? Why didn't they do that? Why didn't they show the truth? Why didn't they tell the truth that, hell, the people from the San Francisco earthquake recovered in a year? And that was, Christ, that was 100 years ago. A 100 years ago, they recovered better than they recovered in New Orleans in a year. And he's bragging about it? I don't see a whole hell of a lot to brag about down there, do you? Not anywhere close to where it ought to be. Nowhere. And there they are out there in public, you know, vote for us or die. That's the message. Vote for us or die. We'll keep you safe. We'll keep you safe. We've got the war on terror. Yeah, they've got the war on terror. They've got the war on terror. They've got the war on Iraq. They've got the war on Afghanistan. And they've got the war on the middle class in this country. They've got the war on us, on all of us, unless you've got your pockets full of money already. I don't know how we stand it. Are some of you the same way as me? There are days when I look at what these people have to say, and I just want to slam the door and walk out of the house and scream. The very idea that the American electorate put this moron back in office after what took place the first 4 years of his first administration. It makes you lose faith in humanity. We can only hope that the voters are going to recover the next time around. Oh my God, if they do, what happens? What happens this fall? Somebody tell me, what happens this fall if the Democrats don't take back the Congress? What happens? What happens if we don't get more people in there? Like Byron DeLeer, that we talked to a little earlier. What happens if this government of ours keeps just swirling down the damn toilet like it is right now? I know most of my listeners understand how important these midterms are coming up, and my God, there's never been an election more important ever. And then we've got 08 coming up, and that's going to be mightily important as well. But we got to start this year. We have to take the Congress back. We have to take the Congress back, And I urge every one of you, please, 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 this is a personal plea from me, go find your local Democratic club and join them. And even if they're not the kind of club that you think they ought to be, help them change to be what they ought to be. Because I am a member of a club that's plain dynamite. Just dynamite. Best damn Democratic club you will ever see. I'm a member of it, and I'm telling you, it's on fire. And it's on fire on every one of our meetings. It's just fantastic. Sitting here in the heart of darkness. In the reddest of red places you could be. And we've got this dynamic Democratic club. Join your local Democratic club. Make a difference in it, please. Tip O'Neill was right. All politics is local. That's where it starts.